Your father complains about how dark you are. Perhaps if you were light as snow, he'd care about you. The first one cackled, "Or if you could read." I growled at them, but you recoiled and guilt stabbed into me, for your lips quivered with unspoken fears, your cheeks were puffed and red from crying, and in your eyes my own anguish was reflected. "Shefali," you said, your voice low. I could hardly hear you over the demons cackling. "Barzillai Shefali al-Sharia, I call you now. 8 times I call you. 8 times I beg for you to return. On this, the 4th day of your sickness." You swallowed. You licked your cracked, swollen lips. "On this, the 4th day of your sickness, you must be killed," you said. A shout died on my lips. "No, not yet." But yours was the expression of a young woman who knows her children will not remember their father. Wrath and fury, sorrow and despair, all these mingled together. You cupped my face and pulled me up toward you. "But I know you are still there, my bull-headed love," you said. "I know you are not dying." Spittle flew from your lips. "I have watched the black blood take life, and it looks nothing like this." So loud, so vehement were you that I thought you were going to slap me. You did. I did not much feel it. Do not let it weigh on your conscience. "You swore to me we'd be together for all our lives," you roared. "Are you a woman of your word, or are you a coward? Speak." I had to speak, though I could not breathe. I had to find the wind to shape my words, though fire coursed through me instead of blood. I had to find the will to live. "Speak. Fight. Return." Over and over I repeated this. Over and over I tried to drown out the voices. "No one survives the black blood. It is an awful disease. In 3 days the victim is dead, and on the 4th, they rise as something different." But I had not died, had I? No, this could not be death. We were together, and I refused to believe that you died too, so I was alive. And if I was alive then I had already lived longer than anyone else with this affliction. My mother once attacked a Hokaran border village. The first time she attacked, she was young and unlearned. While the Korn made camp at night, the Hokarans diverted a river toward them. Al-Shara had to leave in shame, for how could she attack them after such an incident? But the next village she raided, she made sure to flood beforehand. So it is with all Korn. We take things that defeat us. We use them. We master them. And I resolved in that moment, as you held me, that I would do the same for the black blood. I would not let it kill me. No, I had too much to do. I had a people to rule. I had to ride with you against the traitor. No disease would slay me. I would take this weapon the Hokarans used against my people, and I would welcome it into myself. I would strike fear into their hearts. I would become something more than human. I coughed. I coughed and coughed again, black spewing out of my mouth. I sat up. With one hand I braced myself. With the other, I cleared the hair out of my face. I opened my eyes, and there you sat on top of me. And as the dawn breaking over the Gurkhan Khalsar, so was your smile. "Shefali," you said. "You've returned to me." I ached to kiss you. I could not. If my lips touched yours, they'd bring with them my affliction. "I would not let it kill me," I said. You wrapped your arms around me and I smelled peonies. You pressed your lips to my forehead, and I swear to you the laughing stopped, if only for a moment. "Good," you said. "I will not allow you to die. Royal decree." And somehow, despite the color of blood seeping from my wound, despite the pain and the fever, despite your exhaustion and mine, we laughed. It did not last long. Knocking on the door roused us from our reverie. "Oh, Shizukishon, you cannot keep us from entering." I looked toward the door, You'd piled all the furniture in the room in front of it. Whoever was on the other side was pounding so hard, everything rattled. You bit your lip. I could not let them near you, you said. I nodded. I needed new bandages. You had no idea how to bandage to begin with, and could not touch me as I was. This was not our bed, and so I did not care what happened to it. I tore cloth from the sheets and set about bandaging myself. When I'm done, I said. You nodded. My head throbbed and throbbed. That awful taste was still in my mouth. But I was alive, and that was all that mattered. As I finished, you tossed me one of your robes. It was far too small for me. The sleeves ended half past my elbows, and it covered me to the knee only. To say nothing of the fact that you could never wear this again, and it must have cost you more than some villages produce in a year. We had other things to concern ourselves with. Like what they would say when they saw me standing and breathing. You helped me to my feet. Again the doors rattled.
Oshizuka Shun, the Emperor's champion is here to collect you. You will allow us entry, and you will allow us to remove the corpse from this room.
You winced. You tried to move the heavy desks and wardrobes you'd forced in front of the door. I think you must have put them there at night, and it must have taken you hours. You struggled against them now, your meager weight not enough to move them. The wound in my side burned. All of me burned, and my limbs were wrought iron. But I wanted to help you. I grasped one of the desks by its leg and pulled. As easily as a child moves a toy cart, I moved that desk. It felt so light. You stared at me. Shefali. I cleared my throat. Do not think about it. There was a reason for it. Probably just my greater size, and I've always been stronger than you. That surely was it. But I moved the dressers too with hardly any effort, and the wardrobe taller than I was. Cold fear prickled the hairs on the back of my neck. I was still myself. Of course I was. My body was not distorted. I was still Shefali. You must have thought the same, for you squeezed my arm. Do not worry, my love, you said. You've not changed in your appearance. And it was then that they burst open the doors. 2 dozen armed guards just to retrieve you. 2 dozen armed guards who stopped in their tracks when they saw me. I met their eyes, each and every one of them. Some were afraid, others angered, but that did not change the state of things. I held up my hands, palms out, to show I was not going to hurt anyone. You stepped in front of me.
Barzilai Shefali lives, he said.
The guard captain stepped forward. Slack-jawed, he stared at me. With the butt of his spear, he moved my head this way and that. I suffered this, though I know you rankled at it. I did not particularly feel like being impaled that day.
Oshiro-san,
he said, despite my proper name being used not 2 moments before. I saw your wound myself 3 days ago. You have the black blood. How is it you stand here before me? Have you risen? A voice in the back of my mind shouted that I should tear his heart out for questioning me. I closed my eyes long enough to banish it. My hand twitched. The guards fell into position as one. I opened my eyes to find 2 dozen pikes leveled at my face. No, I said. I didn't die.
Impossible, shouted the guard captain. I saw it myself.
And now you are seeing us standing here, Captain, and hear her words, you said. You stood between the two of us, your arms on your hips. If Yurimurazul is here, then you may bring us to him, but you are not to restrain Barzilai in any way. Am I understood?
She's a demon, shouted one of the men. Look at her eyes. Sir, we have to kill her. She's enspelled the Imperial Niece.
I wanted so badly to roll my eyes. As if magic were real, beyond the simple things healers could do. As if we lived in the age long gone. As if anyone had seen a fox woman or a phoenix or even a lion dog in centuries.
She has not, you said. I will offer you any proof you like.
You reached for your short sword and pricked your finger. A single ruby of blood flowed from the tip. It looked delicious, like a cherry ready to be eaten and... I am sorry, my love.
My affliction is, it is like hearing your most base urges shout back at you by an entire army. Things that would normally be fleeting distractions become horrible drones. But if you have read this far, then you deserve to know what I thought, and when I thought it, and all the terrible things that came to mind. As I have wondered what went on behind your amber eyes, so you must have wondered what went on behind my green ones. And so I say to you now that since my infection, blood has not looked the same. It has not tasted the same either. On a few occasions I've been made to taste it. Gone is copper. Gone is metal. Instead, it is sweet as the first fruits of spring. I do not consume it. I will not reduce myself to such acts. But I have had to leave a room more than once. At the time, this was not so familiar to me as it is now. I was sickened by myself. How could I think such a thing about you? About your blood? What if this was how it started? You smeared the blood in a lotus shape on your palm and named the heavenly family as you did. Your last petal was the daughter's, and you kissed that one when you were done with it. I swear to be true in blood and spirit, and if I am wrong, may I wilt where I stand. Barzillai has not bewitched me. A moment of silence. I think they were waiting for you to wilt. Occasionally it has been known to happen with false oaths, or at least it did when the gods in flesh still roamed. When you did not wilt, the party relaxed as much as they could when confronted with someone who is possibly a demon. "Now, Captain," he said, crossing one arm across your chest and gesturing with the bloody one, "lead us to Yuri Morozov, and do be sure to introduce us properly." The guard captain grit his teeth. But he did lead us through the barracks. He did lead us out near the wall. A large pavilion tent with imperial flags stood not far away. Such tents have always puzzled me. The felt walls of Agair are more warm, more comfortable, than canvas could ever be. Why then do outlanders insist on canvas tents? A small tent is one thing. If only one or two people are traveling, a tent is preferable. But any tent large enough to fit four or more should be Agair. This is a gross failing of your people, and I expect to see it rectified by the time I return. You have the power. Do not disappoint me. The three of us stepped inside the imperial tent. I tried not to reach for your hand. It was such a natural thing to do, Shizuka. Like breathing. Except I was not sure if I was breathing. I was sure that I needed to feel your skin on mine. Though we were only a handspan apart, I might as well have been in Iktar. But we were not in Iktar. We were in Shiseki, and we had a rice eater to deal with. Yuimura Kaito sat in front of a shallow desk. On it, a map of Shiseki and the lands beyond the wall. He was younger than I expected, 5 years older than us at most. He kept his hair long, in the old style, tied in a topknot. The tip of his chin was prickly as a hedgehog. Bushy sideburns needed trimming. A thin scar ran from his ear to the corner of his mouth. He wore deep green robes beneath gold-trimmed armor. One sword was tucked into his belt. When we entered, he flashed us a friendly smile. The guard captain announced us. He used my Hokara name, of course. Yuimura rose and bowed to you from the waist. For me, a short bow from the shoulder. He gestured to two mats for us to sit on. "Oshizuka-shun, it is always a pleasure to be near you," he said. "Sycophants disgusted you. I prepared myself for your cutting retort." "Yuimura-zo," you said. "You are as courteous as ever, but we both know you did not come here simply to be near to me." "What that I did," he said, and something bitter rolled in my stomach. By your standards, that was outright inviting, wasn't it? Laughter in my ears. "See how she looks at him, Steel-Eye. She has always admired his sword." "No. No, no, no. You were just being polite. Just saying hello. You were allowed to speak to other people. I did not own you. You were not a thing to be owned." "But what if..." I squeezed my eyes shut, forced myself to take a breath. "Oshiro-san," he said, "I was told you were injured." Ah, so he did know I existed. How to respond? How does one broach that subject? Yes, I was infected with a disease that kills its victims within 3 days, before twisting them into abominations that must be slain, lest they slaughter everything in sight. No, I don't feel like slaughtering everything in sight. I met Yuri Mora's eyes. Silently I nodded. He tugged at his whiskers. I was, in fact, told you contracted the black blood. It is true, Yuri Mora, Zur. I saw her myself. She wears Oshizuka Shone's clothing because her own was soaked in demon blood, said the guard captain. Yurimura wrapped his fingers on the table. For some time he said nothing. Oshizuka Shone, what have you seen in this matter? Your parents did their best to instill in you something like decorum. You were not very good at it. But every now and again, if you tried, you could make your features blank as paper. You did so then. Barzilai Shefali was wounded fighting Lung, you said. The captain spat on the ground when you spoke the demon's name. She now sits before you whole and unharmed. I fail to understand what is so confusing. You know well what is confusing, Yuimura replied, but he kept his voice light, friendly. Again, he turned to me. I think this is the most a Hokkaran noble has ever looked at me. Oshira-san, baseless though this rumor may be, I kindly request you allow my healer to examine you, if only to assuage the fears of our guard captain here. I stiffened. Healers never liked being near me to begin with. What would they think now? Would they know? How I wanted to reach for your hand. Perhaps then your thoughts could have melded with mine, and we could have made a decision without having to speak to each other. But I could not. Yuri Morizel, you cannot be serious. Barzilai Shefali slew a demon 4 days ago, and you want to have her examined. He smiled and laughed. Oil on flame, that was. You laugh. Yuri Morizel, he said, rising to your feet. How many demons have you slain? Or have you never ventured far enough away from my uncle's heels to see one? The smile died on his face. Oh, Shizuka-shun, he said, his voice low as a stalking cat. You insult me. Your presence insults me, you said. And I admit I gaped a bit. Not 5 minutes ago you were all pleasantries with him. The guard captain eyed me. He must have thought this was my influence on you. Why not tear his throat out and be done with it? Because that is not what civilized people do. That is not what I do. Oh, Shizuka-shun, said Yuimura. You will not speak to me in such a way. You are a young girl. Your uncle worries for you. I am to bring you home safe. If that means restraining you, I shall not hesitate. A string snapped between my ears. I rose. You will not, I said. What did you say? He said. At this point, his hand fell to his sword. I did not want to hurt him. I did not. Ideally, no one would be hurt here, but I could not let them take you away. I could not bear the thought of it. I stood in front of you. You will not, I repeated. Oshira-san, said Yurimura. He rose to meet my eyes, or tried to. I had a hand and a half over him in height. You understand I am the Emperor's champion, I nodded. And still you bar my path. Again I nodded. I could have you arrested, he said, though I cannot say with any malice, simply a statement of fact. You'd remain in the prison here for years. Is that what you want? What I wanted was to hurt him. What I wanted was to strike him down and run off with you. The winds would lead us where we were needed. Your foot brushed against mine. When I looked to you, your eyes spoke to me. Stand aside, my love, if only for a moment. I did, begrudgingly. The Son of Heaven does not worry about me, you said, your voice calmer, more level than I thought it would be. He cares about his dynasty. I have the misfortune of being part of it. Guard spat on the ground. Yuimura winced. May as well cite the father himself. You have been tasked with returning me to the capital. I say to you that I will return, on my own terms, in 8 years, he said. And if you restrain me, you will have to get a hold of me first. Two dozen men you have waiting outside. I would fight them all at once and win.
You paused, daring him to correct you.
That is why you have not asked me to duel, you continued. Because you are well aware I would win.
Uemura crossed his arms.
You cannot expect that to work, he said.
Oshizuka-shun, the Emperor himself sent me. I will not return to Fujino empty-handed because you told me to. Especially not when...
when Oshiro-san's health is in doubt.
It is either you let us leave or I duel you, you said. And you do not want to duel.
Being defeated by a 16-year-old girl would not be good for Uemura. Bad enough if he lost. The champion was not supposed to lose. But to you? To a girl? To a young girl? No one would take him seriously again. Even if you were Oshizuru's daughter.
He tugged at his whiskers. You have insulted me, he said. I cannot let you escape punishment for that.
You scoffed. You insulted Barzilai Shefali, you said. I do not know what you expect to receive in turn. She is too quiet to insult you herself, and so I spoke in her stead.
Uemura and you stared at each other. This was a different sort of duel. If he wanted, he could call for the guards to intervene. We'd have to fight them then. I did not trust myself in such a situation.
We could surrender to him. We could let him lead us back to Fujino, where your uncle would marry you off to whoever curried the most favor with him, and I would likely be put to death for my condition.
You could challenge him. You would win. I'd never seen him touch a sword, but I knew you would win.
Finally, his posture relaxed. If Oshiro-san consents to an examination, then I will consent to your request, he said.
I grunted. So it was up to me then. I thought of you. I thought of your reputation. I thought of your stake on the throne. If this came to blows, you might lose favor.
You looked to me, your brows knit with concern.
You do not have to, you whispered.
And then your face changed. Then your porcelain skin cracked. Then your hair fell from your head in clumps. Your tongue became a wriggling worm, and maggots crawled out of your eyes.
You could kill everyone in this room, you said.
Except it was not you. The awake part of my mind knew this. But there you were. There it was, staring me down and smiling with blackened teeth. My stomach turned inside out. I staggered backwards.
Shefali. Was that your voice? Was that the not you voice?
Laughing. Laughing. Why couldn't they just leave me alone?
People were going to see. I took a few deep, rattling breaths and tried to blink away the apparition. Gradually, its face melted back into yours.
Shefali, are you all right?
You reached for me. You, the real you. Sweat trailed down my forehead. I licked my lips and stood, knowing the sort of scrutiny you'd get for letting me touch you.
Doctors, I said.
For I no longer had the luxury of hiding it, and more important, I needed to know if I would get worse. I needed to know if I would get bad enough that I might hurt you. I remember everything the doctors did, sharp as the knives they cut me with. As soon as I was taken into their rooms, the guards barred the doors, and no matter how much you shouted, they would not let you in. Four of them piled on top of me. With great steel chains, they bound my hands and feet. One of them cut through my clothing, cut through that beautiful robe you'd lent me, and tossed it to the floor like a pile of rags. They called it an examination. They cut me over and over to better collect my blood. They reopened my wound. They referred to me as it, as the demon. They heated a knife and held it against my skin to see if I felt pain. When I yelped and pulled away, they continued, for they had to see if I'd become a black blood then and there, if my limbs would suddenly break and reform into something great and terrible. The lead doctor pointed out my many scars, my height, the lean muscles of my arms. These things were barbaric, he said. But he made certain to joke that I arrived in such a state, and it had nothing to do with the demon's blood coursing within me. Hokkarans hunt tigers, trap tigers, I should say.
They dig huge pits and cover them with leaves. When the tiger steps on it, it falls far enough down that it cannot easily leap back up. Hakarans stand at the edge of the pit, firing arrows into the tiger until it dies. Maybe the tiger we killed is haunting me in more ways than one. At least the hunters are smart enough to make sure the tiger does not leave the pit alive. Yes, I was a wounded tiger when I loped out of that room, wounded and sick with hatred. They gaped at me in fear because they knew I could squash them between my fingers. With my bare hands, I could reach into their guts and tear out all the things that kept them alive. I could do these things and I could have escaped those bonds. But Shizuka, Shizuka, I did not want them to take you back. I did not want to kill them. No, that is a lie. I wanted to kill them. But I did not want you associated with such an act. I did not want blood to soak your reputation. I did not want people to whisper about the company you kept. All I had to do was endure. A little pain, a lot of shame, and I should have killed them. I should have listened to the disembodied heads that watched as they cut into me. I should have slaughtered them. Upon seeing me, your whole countenance twisted. The mother herself feared you in that moment. Your delicate hands became talons. Your doll-like features were now a war mask. "What have you done?" you roared at the doctor. "We gave Oshiro-san a thorough examination," said the lead doctor. Already I was not in my own body. Already I leaned against you for support and did not care who saw. But as the doctor spoke, I saw the not you standing behind him, cackling. I whimpered. "We have determined she is indeed infected with black blood. How she lives, we do not know. All blood drawn ran black as a traitor's heart, yet the subject seems docile enough. Certainly it does not." "You shall cease talking," he snarled. "You shall fall to your knees and you shall apologize for what you have done. You shall crawl, on elbows and knees, back to Urimura-Zul's tent. You shall tell him what you have done in detail. You shall tell him I have sent you in such a state. Go. Crawl. If you stop for a single moment, I will cut off your hands." And as he sank to his knees, the not you sank with him, its head twisted all the way around on its neck, like an owl so that it could stare at me. I could not stand it, Shizuka. I turned away. I did not want to return to Yuimura's tent. I did not want to look at it. I did not want to hear those awful voices in my mind. I wanted it all to stop. I longed for darkness. I longed for the silence of the steps. Anything. Anything that was not this pitiful excuse for an existence. "Did you glance down the hallway before you kneeled next to me? Did you check if anyone saw us? For you pressed your forehead to mine, and you embraced me in the way lovers do. Shefali," you said, "do not worry. I am here now, my love. You are safe. I am sorry. If it... You have suffered so much on my account, and..." And there comes a point when one has suffered so much in one day that one no longer feels, that one no longer exists, a snuffed candle leaving only a smoldering wick and smoke. For me it was that moment. I could think of nothing to say. The word suffering meant nothing until I woke from my deathbed. Now it was everywhere. It was the air I breathed. It was the beating of my heart. It was my blood and my flesh and my bones. We did not leave the wall that day. When we returned to our rooms, you held me close and whispered in my ear of better days. You told me of your garden and all the flowers you had. You recited to me from memory the letters we'd written to each other as children. You told me with such certainty, with such fire, that everything would be all right, that you would never let anyone hurt me again. You kept whispering until you fell asleep, but I stayed awake. That night, and most nights since, I lay awake, staring at the ceiling. Though I tried to calm myself enough to sleep, though I closed my eyes and prayed to all the gods for just a moment of peace, nothing came. Only the not you. Only its taunting. Only its fungus-stained nail dragging down my cheek. "Come with me, my love," it said. "Leave her behind. Kiss me, that you might taste true power." I turned away and nuzzled closer to you. Still, I felt it there next to me. "Does it not bother you how you are treated?" I shook my head. "Does it not bother you how she makes you suffer? How she swears to keep you safe, but only hurts you?" Bile in my mouth. "Think of what you could do on your own, Steel Eye. What you could do with me at your side. All you have to do is crush her throat. Simple as that. Okara will crumble without an empress to lead it. You and yours will overtake it. Never again will you struggle beneath their heels, Steel Eye. You could do it." I covered my ears, knowing it would not help. Its wormy tongue lapped at my earlobe. "But you are weak, aren't you? You've always been weak. A coward. When was the last time you slew a man with your sword? I do not think you could do it. So you will weep in your bed like a child, rather than do what needs to be done." You woke to the sound of my weeping. For many nights it was like that. I did not leave our rooms, and so you did not either. Yuimura called on you. You wrote him a polite, if dismissive letter informing him you would not leave until I felt ready to travel. You mentioned casually that the doctor who examined me should be imprisoned. So they were. 2 weeks we stayed in Shiseki. I slept twice in that time, and ate perhaps 4 times. I no longer felt hungry, no longer felt sleep calling to me. Only in the dark hours of the night did I leave the room. I left the barracks altogether, mounted my horse, and rode for a few hours. What did I have to fear from the dark? Demons? I was near enough to one. Bandits? Let them come. I could throw them like toys. Guards? I was a monster to them, a thing to be avoided. So I split my time between you and my horse, the two most important women in the world. Alsha did not try any of her smart tricks. No, she cantered about as if I were a child. That was fine with me. I did not want to go too fast. I did not much want to do anything. It was on one such nighttime ride that I saw campfires in the distance. I was out farther than the patrols went. I found myself riding closer. If they were bandits, I could end them. I might welcome the distraction it'd bring to the demons haunting me. If they were not bandits, I could leave and bring back word of what I'd seen. But the closer I came, the clearer it was. 3 bright white gares guarded by 1 dozen braided warriors. My mother had finally found us. Our sleeves wet with tears. I did not spend much time around your mother, and for this I will always feel some regret. Oshizuru exists in stories as a dark woman, hands forever coated with blood, trailed always by crows. I know these stories cannot hope to capture her essence, just as the stories of my mother failed to capture hers. But I remember distinctly the way she spoke about her position, Imperial Executioner. Whenever the subject came up, she would scoff. Once I awoke in the middle of the night, after dreaming a dragon ate my leg, and I saw your mother sitting with a cup in one hand and a bottle in the other. Her gray-streaked hair was all a mess. "I'm no executioner," she said. "Yoshimoto calls me that only so he can feel better about himself. I am either his butcher or his last resort." And here I remember she took a sip of her rice wine, which was always at her side. "Bandits or blackbloods, that's all I ever fight. He never sends me after nobles, never has me act as anyone's second. Between the two, Shefa Lilong, between things that were once people I liked and people who turned to robbery to fill their bellies, I'd rather have..." I never got to hear her answer, Your father emerged not long after that, and with gentle words convinced her that it was time for bed. I have thought on that moment many times since then. Which is worse, to confront the dead you once knew, or to confront strangers you sympathize with? Whose blood is heavier? I will tell you. The worst thing in life is to face your family after you have shamed them. For the moment I spotted my mother's white felt gear, I knew that if I told her of my condition, I might as well be killing her. I wished it'd been bandits instead. If bandits approached camp, I'd know precisely what to do. Draw my bow and fire until no one remained. If guards caught me, then I would have raced them back to the barracks. They would have had no hope of catching me on my good corn mare. But she was my mother. My mother, who hated boats as much as I did, and warned me as a child never to take one. My mother, who abhorred leaving the steps for any reason except to see your mother. From what I knew, she had not been to the Wall of Flowers since she traveled with Oshizuru and the 16 Swords. What was initially a mission to clear out invading Blackbloods became a lasting warning against confronting them. Oh, our mothers slew one of the traitor's generals. For this, the entire empire sang your mother's praises. But every one of the other swords died in the effort. 14 of the most renowned warriors in Hokkaido, from all walks of life. General Kikamura fought alongside a cobbler from southern Fuitsuki province. The youngest daughter of silk merchants, a man with grandchildren about to marry. All that mattered was their swordplay. And look where that got them. Whatever triumph our mothers felt was tempered by the loss of their companions. No, my mother had not returned to Shiseki since she spent 8 days in a cave being tortured. Yet here she was. Here was her gear with its banner flapping in the wind. She did not know what had happened to me. I could not tell her. I could not. My affliction, so feared by my people, had not killed me. Instead, I felt myself becoming something else. Should I run? I sat frozen in the saddle. Should I run from my own mother, rather than tell her what had happened? Should I rouse you from your slumber and ask you what to do? What if our riders spotted me first? What then? What was I going to do? What was I going to say? As far as she knew, I'd run off on some bull-headed adventure. She could not know. She could not imagine the thoughts drifting through her daughter's mind. Could not know how afraid I was to leave the room when I knew others would be near. But I could no longer listen to the voices calling me a coward. Before all this happened, I faced a tiger and felt no fear. Before all this, I faced a demon. I was tiger-striped Shefali, not Shefali the fearful. And if I could endure the pain of a slow death, I could endure the shame of returning to my mother's gear. And so I rode toward the bright white gears, and so I dismounted. Temurin, standing outside my mother's gear, had to look twice to confirm it was me. Barzilai, she called, and she reached for me. She tried to take me by the shoulder and embrace me. Brakila has traveled long to find you. I recoiled from her touch, not out of malice but concern. Some small part of me worried even that contact would infect others. Temurin stared at her four-fingered hand. A deep frown engraved itself onto her brown skin, her wrinkles only adding to it. Our most loyal guard was earning a crown of gray hairs for her service. I had not noticed them before I left. When did they appear? Barzilai, you do not want my greeting. I licked my lips. No, I did not want her greeting. I wanted everyone's. But if she sniffed my cheek, she might smell the rot that hung around me like a cloud. I could not risk making her sick. Mother, I said. You are acting strangely, Temurin said, crossing her arms. You will not let me smell you. How am I to know you are truly Barzilai? You might be a demon wearing her form. I opened my hand, closed it. My fingers twitched. My nostrils flared. Why was I standing around listening to this when I could barrel through? No, those were not my thoughts. Instead, I leaned forward and sniffed both Temurin's cheeks. She smelled of old leather and horses. Yes, that was Temurin as I remembered her. She took me by the shoulders and I forced myself to relax. I cannot deny the fear that grasped me as she pressed her nose to my cheek. What if this simple act killed her? When she pulled away, she wrinkled her nose. "You smell different," she said, "like two sweet flowers." I flinched. "Mother," I said again, my voice more sharp this time. She narrowed her grassy eyes at me. "All right," she said. "Barsotak must be turning you into something more Hokaran, I suppose. Go in. Rakila is sleeping. If it is you, she will not mind being awoken." I opened the red door. 4 bedrolls laid out around the fire pit. No warm orange light filled the inside. The pit had long since turned to ash. Only the roof of the gear allowed any sort of brightness. At the center of the roof was a small opening to see the stars through. On full moon nights, this illuminated the gear nicely. That night was not a full moon night. And yet I saw perfectly in the dark. I stepped among the sleeping bodies of my family with ease. Scattered pots and pans, bows tucked under pillows, empty water skins and bowls. I avoided all of them. I do not want to say that the room was not dark in my vision, for it was. But it was not. Not so deep, I suppose. Ink and water. I found my mother sleeping on the western side of the gare. I shook her awake. She shot up and immediately reached for the knife she kept beneath her pillow. She got as far as grabbing me by the hair and pressing it to my throat before she realized whom she was about to kill. Her lips parted. A sound escaped them akin to a mouse's squeak. She dropped the knife and touched my face, cleared my hair away. "Mother," I whispered. She drew me close and sniffed my cheeks. She squeezed me so tight my back cracked. She rocked me back and forth. My mother swore an oath of silence at 16. I was 16 then as she embraced me. As the soft sounds of tears filled the tent, like clashing swords. I was 16 when I heard my mother speak for the first time. I thought I imagined it. Honestly, I did. The voices must be taunting me. It was not my mother. It could not be my mother. Except this voice was not like the others. It was warm and sweet and rich, like spiced tea thick with honey. "You are safe," she whispered. My jaw dropped. I did not know what to say. I was not safe, but my mother was so worried she had actually spoken, and... No, I would not tell her tonight. Instead, I let her hold me. I let her count my fingers and toes as she had when I was a child, and check me for new scars. The wound Lung gave me had already healed by then. She saw no trace of it. Even the cuts the surgeons gave me had healed. To my mother's trained eyes, there was nothing wrong with me. After a few minutes of this, she grabbed a pot and banged her knife against it until the entire gear sprang awake. The entire gear cursed too, but I do not blame them. It was long past last bell. No one in their right mind is awake at such an hour. Otgar, her mother, her father, and another one of my aunts angrily rubbed their eyes. "Rakila," Otgar murmured. "I swear by Grandmother Sky, you must be deaf as well as mute." She stopped upon seeing me. A grin spread across her wide, flat face. She pulled me into a hug so fast and so tight, I slammed right into her. But she was the one who staggered backwards. "Cousin Needle Nose," she said, quickly sniffing my cheeks. "Did you get heavier lugging all Barsotok's things around?" And it made me chuckle. After all these months, that is what Otgar said to me. "Your laugh tells me it is true," she said, slinging an arm around me. My aunts and uncles gathered around and welcomed me home, despite the hour. We lit a fire. We drank kumak together, and no one questioned where I'd been. No one questioned what I'd been up to. No one questioned why I did not sleep. In the morning, I excused myself from the revelries. I needed to return to you, and I wanted to do so before too many people were out. Otgar demanded to come along. After all, the last time I left camp alone, I ran off to the north to fight demons. A man leaves home to fight for the Emperor. When he leaves, he is a young man, perhaps 22. His wife is pregnant. He swears to her he will return before their son is named. For 10 years, he serves. Only when he loses an arm does the Emperor discharge him. The man returns home, traveling through the Empire on his own. He dreams of what kind of boy his son has grown to be. He decides to spend his meager earnings on a book and ink for his son. When he reaches his old house, he does not recognize the weathered woman on the porch as his wife, does not realize the young girl selling flowers at market is his daughter. His home is the same, but nothing else is. So it was with me. Every time I saw myself, I was surprised. No, that could not be my reflection. It had not changed. My features were as dark as ever, my nose just as thin, my lips just as full, my hair the same shade of flaxen blonde. My eyes had not changed color, still tea-leaf green. How was it possible when my mind was so different? How was it possible after what I had suffered? I kept my thoughts to myself. Utgard did not know, and I was not going to tell her. Lucky for me, she had other concerns. "You've got some explaining to do, Needlenose," she said when we were out of earshot. I stiffened. My cousin spoke in her usual jovial manner. On the surface, nothing was amiss. She had no reason to suspect me. But that does not stop the demons whispering in my ears that she knows, that she is going to tell my mother, that she and my mother... I swallowed. "No, demons lie." "That's right," Utgard said. "You should be afraid. Did you think you could bed the heir to this godsforsaken empire in my gear and get away with it? My gear that I made with my own two hands?" "Oh," I coughed. My cheeks felt hot. I was so wrapped up in my own troubles, I'd not considered that. I opened my mouth to say something apologetic. She slapped me hard on the shoulder. It did not hurt as much as she expected it to. "You've always hunted dangerous game," Utgard said. "Always pick the most difficult path. But this time you've really outdone yourself. Are you aware what will happen if others find out?" As if I had not had nightmares about your people finding out. But wait a moment. "You are not angry," she scoffed, staring at me as if I'd asked a question with an obvious answer. After a few seconds of this, her disbelief only grew. "Barzilai," she said. "You truly did not notice?" I frowned and shook my head. I did not know what game my cousin played at, but I did not like it much. "Barzilai, your mother loved Nisurin." "Obvious," I said. "My mother only ever smiled in your mother's presence. Of course she loved her. They've been through unimaginable pain together. Their friendship was forged from heavenly steel." Utgard palmed her face. She tugged at her gelding's reins and brought him to a stop. "I am sure you know by now that Khorne do not stop riding until they reach their destination or their camp for the night. It is very bad luck." So Utgard spat on the ground before she continued speaking. "Barzilai," she said, "crawl out of your lovesick cave for one moment and listen to what I am saying. Your mother loved Nisurin. Loved her." "Obvious," I repeated. Anyone could see what good friends they were. The two of them used to exchange war stories, though my mother never spoke. Shizuru never learned a word of Khorne, but she still knew what Alshar wrote or signed just from reading her body. Utgard tugged at her hair. "Barzilai," she said, her voice curt, "your mother wanted to bed Nisurin."
"What?"
"No."
"No, no, no. That could not. No. My mother had two children. My mother never had in my 16 years brought a lover into the gear. Certainly she and my father did not speak. Ever. But that did not mean they were unfaithful. I'd never seen my father with a lover either. No, I did not see him as often, but it just could not be. Not my mother. Not Burkila Alshara."
"Why do you think?" Utgard said. "I had to go fetch her after Nisurin died. Because she wanted to go on a trading trip?"
"No. She was just mourning her only friend. It was not that out of the ordinary."
I must have been gaping. I cannot imagine the look on my face. You will have to imagine it. I'm certain you know it better than I do.
Utgard pinched her temples.
She took a deep breath. Your mother keeps a clipping of Nasirin's hair with her to this day, Atgar said. She wears it beneath her deal where no one will see it. It is the only such favor she received. As she spoke, her voice rose higher and higher. No matter what Burkila did, she could not win Nasirin over. Her many fearsome deeds, her prowess with a sword, her skill as a Karsa, her beauty. None of these caught Nasirin's attention. A poet did. A poet, Sheikh Ali. A man who never saw a day of battle in his life over Al-Shara. Al-Shara. Atgar used my mother's birth name. My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth. This was not how one spoke about an aunt. The demon's words echoed between my ears. Your mother lies with your cousin, Steel Eye. Atgar's eyes went wide. She covered her mouth as if to try to hold in the words she'd already spoken. It is a very sad story, she mumbled. But she did not meet my eyes. I only meant to say that you must be careful, Sheikh Ali. If her people find out, they will not be so accepting. Remember how her uncle hates us. He could have you executed. I grunted. Though birds soared overhead, though the wind rustled tree branches, I heard only screaming, laughing. You should trust us more, Steel Eye, they said. I screwed my eyes shut. My cousin meant well, she did. I am certain she set out to do nothing more than berate me, possibly congratulate me. But she did not know what was going on in my mind at the time. She could not have known what a storm would envelop me. My mother loved your mother. My mother wanted to bed your mother. What did she think then of the two of us? And why did Atgar use my mother's birth name? We rode the rest of the way in silence. When we reached the barracks, the guards questioned me. Who is this other... woman? A pause there. They meant to say barbarian, of course, but they did not know if Atgar spoke Hakarn. Dorbente Atgar Bayasak is my name, she said, sounding for all the world as if she were born and raised in Fujino. I am Barzilai Sheikh Ali's cousin.
True cousin? Said the guard.
No, said Atgar. False cousin. I was created from a vat of clay by my mother who happened to be Burkila's sister. The guards blinked. Yes, snapped Atgar. I am her true cousin. It was only after some muttering that they let us in. I had Atgar wait outside while I spoke to you. I found you pacing in our rooms, racked with worry. You two held me tight. You covered my face in burning kisses. You smelled me. You whispered into my ear that you missed me. In your embrace, I felt human again. Something about your voice drowned out the chorus of insults. Fool Corrin, you said. Leaving in the middle of the night, I thought... I squeezed your arm. I was here. That was the important thing. Did you get any rest? You said. Pain in my chest. You fell asleep so quickly and so deeply that you had not noticed I'd left most nights. I did not want to lie to you. If I did, the demons would approve. Nothing they approved of was good. Beyond that, it is hard to look at you and lie. It is as if the truth shines from your eyes. But all of this was becoming so heavy. My mother and her feelings, whatever they were, Utgard's strange outburst, the demon blood coursing through my veins. I could not do this alone. No, I said. I do not sleep anymore. Your amber eyes widened. You paused. You looked as if someone had struck you. I regretted speaking. I hated seeing you like this, knowing that my state of existence brought you pain. Sheikh Ali, you said. You cupped my face. My love, we will find some way to heal you, and we will leave this place soon. You and I will find some place all our own. We will find somewhere quiet, somewhere you can ride your horse, and I will be safe from the court's prying eyes, and we will find a way to heal you. This I swear. The only way to cure me is to kill me, I think, but I did not say that to you then, for you were so full of hope. Gods, Shizuka, it is so hard to look at you sometimes. I feel as if my whole being bends to your will, as if I have no choice but to follow wherever you may lead. What a terrible thing, to love someone so completely. What an awful joy. We should leave today, he said, before your mother arrives. She has, I said. You winced. Do you want to tell her? I shook my head. Truth be told, I was not sure I wanted to return. My mother keeping something so important for me for so many years left a bad taste in my mouth, and my stomach twisted at the thought of seeing her and Otgar in the same gear. This was my family. This was my home. And yet it felt alien now, or the people did, as if I'd been living with strangers my whole life. Shefali, you said. She will hear one way or another. Would you not prefer she heard it from you? I'd prefer she never learned that her daughter found the sight of blood appetizing, but I knew that was unlikely. I looked at my feet. Shizuka, I said. You instantly looked up, stopped pacing, and came near to me. Yes, he said. Is something wrong? Did something happen? Say the word and I will find whoever. My mother is like me, I said. With women. You tilted your head, squinted. Like us, you said. How are you sure? Dorbente, I said. Dorbente told me. She said... The words stuck in my throat. What I wanted to say... She said Alshar loved your mother. But what left me was a strangled sound, a whimper. I laid my head against your shoulder. You ran your fingers through my hair. Perhaps you sensed I was not done speaking. You scratched my head and whispered to me that it would be all right, that you would wait as long as I needed. But there was so much I wanted to say. My mother loved yours and never told me. My cousin speaks of my mother in terms too familiar. My thoughts weren't my own anymore. My mother didn't know what happened to me, and I did not want to tell her. There was just so much going on. Wet lips against my ear. The smell of soggy death. Why not leave? It said. You can distract that cousin of yours easily enough. Leave, Steel Eye. Why face such foul people ever again, when you can do so much more on your own? I forced myself to swallow the razors in my throat, grabbed handfuls of your beautiful robes. My decision was made. I would not be the person my demons wanted me to be. I would not run from these mounting problems. I held you at arm's length. When I spoke, it was more clearly, more loudly. She said my mother loved yours, I said. You leaned in, cocked a brow, parted your lips, the sort of face one makes when they are sure they've misheard something. As more than a friend, I nodded. Fingers flew to lips. Your delicate brow furrowed in thought. My mother loved my father, you said. They did not stray. They could not tear their eyes from each other. Your mother did not love mine, I said. Your shoulders slumped. You sat on the bed, head perched on your hand, the bells in your hair singing a bright song. Do you remember Shefali? You said. When we were 8. The tiger. The feast, you said. Or the next morning. You were in your gear at the time, and your mother too. My mother got it in her hungover head to say goodbye to Burkila's mare. I flinched. One did not touch a Karsa's horse, not unless one had a death wish, or, well, a husband could touch his wife's horse. No one would question that. But Shizuru's husband was a Hokaran poet, not the Karsk. I told her it was a fool thing to do since horses cannot speak. She ignored me. I remember she touched that mare between the eyes, fed it a sweet, and told it to behave. How on earth did no one see that? But then most of us were hungover that morning, and we left very early on. My father saw her do this, too, he said. And this is the only time I can recall he ever raised his voice to her. Shizuru, he said, you would not do that if you knew what it meant. You paused. I do not know what it means.
Married, I said.